Hey, everybody. I hope you enjoy this country-ish bonus dish. This one, man, I'm telling you, this was one of the best interviews. Well, one of the longest ones. I love this guy. Diamond Dallas Page was on an episode, and we made that in the podcast about 18 minutes, but we talked over an hour. And he really does have a fascinating story about how he got started in wrestling. He got started late in his career, broke his back, all this stuff. He's got great stories about other wrestlers, too. So you're really going to want to listen to this whole thing. And don't forget, if you like it, share it. Pass it on. We love it when you share things. And I'm on the road, too. Check my tour dates out sometime, why don't you? JohnReap.com. Click on the tour dates. I'm out there. I might be in your backyard right now. But for now, check out this bonus dish with DDP. And joining me right now, here he is, the man, the myth, the legend, Mr. Diamond Dallas Page. You're an entertainer, you're a hero, you're a lifesaver, and I just have so many questions. I signed up for your DDP Yoga Now program.
Did you really?
I did.
That's awesome.
I just recently did it. But I want to. I have so many questions to ask you. I don't even know where to begin.
Start at the beginning.
Start at the beginning. That's a good point. So I was. You're born and raised New Jersey. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm a Jersey boy, but I was out of there by the time I was 18. I love the Jersey Shore. In the same county that I grew up in, Bam Bam Bigelow, John Bon Jovi, Bruce Springsteen. Danny DeVito and Jack Nicholson, all from the same, like, 10 miles.
Wow.
Pretty crazy. It was a great place to grow up. Be almost like that town, that movie that that they did years ago called Truman. I mean, it was like, it's just a small little beach town. And it was a great place to grow up. But you know, I wanted to see the world. And it started in the nightclub business. And I don't know if you noticed or not, but I didn't even become a professional wrestler until I was 35 years old.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. Like, how do you go from growing up in New Jersey and then playing basketball to getting into managing nightclubs and eventually wrestlers and becoming a wrestler?
Well, what's really funny is I tried to wrestle when I was 23, and it didn't work out for me. It was really about, I got hit by a car when I was 12 years old, and it hit my right knee, my face bounced off the hood, and I flew 42 feet from the point of impact. And back then, there was no such thing as rehab, unless you played for the Knicks or the, you know, or the Jets or the Giants. So they didn't know anything about it, and they wouldn't let me play football or hockey anymore, and I loved football. I mean, I was a football fanatic.
Yeah.
In my mind, I was going to, you know, when I finally went through my, through my childhood and into my adult life, I planned on, I'm going to be a defensive end for the Giants or the Jets or the Dallas Cowboys. I mean, that's the way my mind thought as a little kid.
Yeah.
And pretty much everything that I was allowed to do and goals that I set, I achieved them all. Wow. You know, maybe I was a little to the left, sometimes a little to the right, a little bit under, but most times I blew right past those goals. And so saying I was going to play in the NFL is not a far stretch for me, you know, but that was never going to happen because they wouldn't let me play anymore. So the bottom line is, and I tried to wrestle. I was an athlete in basketball. I sucked when I first started. I hated it, but it's all I could really do.
Yeah.
And I wasn't any good at baseball. But basketball, I like to watch the game. So I figured, let me learn how to play it. And I became one of the best guys in our area. And, you know, I had a good intramural type. Played on teams and college teams and not professional, but a pretty good amateur career and just having fun. But I was in the nightclub business since I was 18, too. And when I hurt my knee when I was wrestling, because I wrestled 3 matches. When I hurt my knee, I got an opportunity to run my first like little rock and roll bar. And it was bars on both sides of it. So I really had so much fun with what I call the booze, the broads, and the party that I stopped paying attention to the goal of professional wrestling. And wrestling blew up huge in the early 80s. Mm-hmm. And I was so mad at myself for not staying the course, focusing on my dream, getting healed and coming back. I was so mad at myself for not following through that I stopped watching wrestling. Mm. And then one night I was flicking the channels and I saw Gorilla Monsoon, and he was with some guy who had a leather coat on and a do-rag and crazy sunglasses and a boa. And it was Jesse the Body Ventura. Mm. And I was like, who the hell is this guy? He is just like the coolest cat. He had so much charisma. And he was a color commentator, former wrestler. Mm-hmm. The first match to go from those guys talking to the ring was a guy who walked to the ring with a bag over his shoulder. And it turned out it was Jake the Snake Roberts. Mm-hmm. And I was so mesmerized by Jake. Uh-huh. Like, wow, the way he walks, the way he talks, the way he cuts his promos, his work in the ring. I was like, wow, these other guys, some of them are really good, but that guy, he's great.
Yeah.
And, it's that pulled me back in and got me a fan again. And then one night when I was running a big club that I owned a piece of in Fort Myers, Florida, Jake came in there.
Okay.
And I couldn't believe it. And I was in my office looking at the front, people come in the front door.
How old were you at this time? How old were you when Jake the Snake walked in there?
30 years old.
Okay.
And when he walked in, I freaking ran it because the club, 1,100, 1,200 people in there. So I'm not going to try to get through the crowd. I went around the outside of the building, walked in the door, and said to the receptionist, I said, I was taking the money. I was like, did a guy walk in here look like Jake the Snake? She goes, man, everybody thinks it's him. And I buzzed in there and I saw him. And I slowed down. Yeah, I want to be cool.
Yeah.
And I was like, hey, man, you Jake the Snake Roberts. He's like, who wants to know? And I said, the guy who runs this place. He goes, yes, I am. What can I do for you? I said, what are we drinking?
Uh-huh.
And that's how it started.
Okay.
And to think, like, that's 1990.
Yeah.
In 2012, I moved them into my house.
Oh, wow.
And helped them get sober. Have you never seen Resurrection of Jake the Snake?
I haven't seen it yet. I just watched the trailer. It's happening tonight. That's crazy. So the goal was wrestling at one point, and then it wasn't the goal, and it became the goal again. And who were some of your influences when you were a kid, when you were watching wrestling, before Jake the Snake and all that stuff?
Before, when I was 16, 17, 18, those are the years where you little kids say, I want to be a wrestler. But mm-hmm. as you get older, my influence would have been Handsome Jimmy Valiant, Superstar Billy Graham, the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they had just so much charisma. And then when I tried it, Bruno Sammartino was a huge icon in the New York, New Jersey area where I came from. But when I went, when I decided to start watching again, it was that whole 80s era, which was Macho and Piper and Hogan and all those guys. They were like gods, and Jake was a part of that,
mm-hmm.
and one of the top guys in that. So he came in my club. Of course, he didn't pay for any drinks. And then I have a picture of Ted DiBiase, which I told him I never put out there. But he's back. I've got his hair back like this and a bottle of tequila. And he's guzzling the tequila. And then I did it, and he did it to me. And we did it back and forth till we both said, okay, it's a draw. But,
I grew up in North Carolina, Hickory, North Carolina, not a big town, outside of Charlotte. So I grew up watching the Rock and Roll Express. I'm 48 years old. I grew up watching, Ricky Steamboat, Ric Flair, the Rock and Roll Express. And then as I got older, of course,
Dusty Rhodes,
all that good stuff. So
that was to me, that and the 90s were just super special era. What these guys are doing today is still good. It's different. And I still think it's, I mean, you got to be an incredibly athletic athlete today.
Okay.
But back then, it was a lot of, definitely had to be a good athlete, but you also had to have a ton of charisma. And you had to be able to grab the people and not so much make them believe, but create the element of doubt.
Okay.
And when you're doing that in professional wrestling, that's when you're really over. And if you take my greatest matches I've ever had, I would have to say my feud with Randy Savage in 1997. We were the feud of the year, according to Pro Wrestling Illustrated. My matches with Sting, Goldberg, I mean, they're legendary, man. They were phenomenal matches, you know?
How did you settle on, I know, DDP, Diamond Dallas Page? I'm sure a lot of wrestlers come up with different names. How did, was the diamond thing because of the Diamond Dolls and Dallas because you love the Cowboys?
Well, yeah, it started with the Cowboys as a little kid, and my dad was not a big fan of the Cowboys, and I was only with them until I was like 8 years old. But that was one of the things we shared was watching football. Before I changed it, was Paige Joseph Falkenberg, and I knew that that was never going to draw any money in the world of professional wrestling. So when I decided to be a professional wrestler when I was 23 or try it, I loved the name Dallas, and I didn't know anybody who had it.
Yeah.
And I love the name Paige, so I just put Dallas Paige together. And when I started, you know, it's funny because what happened after all the wrestlers started coming in my club, I started doing my own commercials, and I might impersonate one.
Oh, like, yeah, I heard about that. Okay.
Like, oh, yeah, like Wednesday night, digging hot legs. Don't miss it. Ooh, yeah. And I might throw Randy in there, or Hulk, or Dot, or Dusty, or any guys like that. And so they didn't know if it was real or not because those guys came in my club. Not Randy didn't, but, you know, bringing Jake and Jake and, you know, the Million Dollar Man was in there. The Bushwhackers were in there. The Nasty Boys were, like, a lot of the guys came through. Judge, Marty Jannetty and Shawn Michaels. I mean, I got pictures of so many guys. Jesse Ventura came in the club one time. So
is that Norma Jean's?
No, it was Norma Jean's Dance Club. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they didn't know if it was them or what it was. So one night, I was in my nightclub, and I was collecting the drawers, you know, the money. And then everybody comes in the back, and all the bartenders count their money, and we sit around drinking and tell stories. And Smokey, my head bartender, when I grabbed his drawer, they were playing a video of Girls Just Want to Have Fun with Cyndi Lauper.
Yeah, yeah.
And in that video, Captain Lou Albano was in it.
Really?
And so it was, yes, he played her father and in the video. And he had the, you know, rubber bands in his face, rubber bands in his, you know, goatee. And I loved Captain Lou growing up as a kid.
Uh-huh.
As far as a talker, he was someone who I loved to watch.
Yeah.
And I always wanted, if he was talking, I was listening. And so I'm watching that video, and I'm just thinking, rock and wrestling. And I'm talking out loud to myself. I should have been a part of that. And I grab Smokey's drawer, and I walk to the back. And he comes in like, Paige J. And everybody called me Paige J because my dad was in the club a lot. And by that time, we got reconnected. And he was out in the parking lot, you know, directing traffic, having a couple cocktails. But he always called himself Paige One.
Okay.
And he knew you don't call me Paige Two, you know. And that's where Dallas came from, you know, when I was a little kid. So Smokey, nobody knows about Dallas Page. They only know Paige J in Fort Myers, Florida. And Smokey comes in the office, and all the other bartenders are in there, and we're drinking and counting money. And he goes, Paige J. He goes, what do you mean rock and wrestling? You should have been a part of that. I said, well, I tried it when I was a kid. He's like, what? You were a wrestler. I said, I had three matches. I wouldn't say I was a wrestler, but hey, I had three matches. And he said, well, what was your name? And I said, Handsome Dallas Page. And he went, oh, you can forget about using that gimmick anymore. And everybody laughed. And it just got in my head that night.
Yeah.
And as we're drinking, you know, a lot of people say they think really well on, you know, smoking herb or whatever. I was never any kind of a pot guy or anything like that. I like a cocktail, though. And my mind just started racing. And I thought, I wrote down Diamond Dallas Page. And I'm writing it on a blotter, like a blotter, you know, on my desk in my office. And there's 15 of us in the office. And I'm thinking, I'm too old. At that time, I'm 31.
Right.
I'm too old to be a wrestler. Okay, so bottom line is Jimmy Hart got the Hart Foundation. What if I was a – not just talking shit. You know, I'm not like saying I'm going to do this. I'm saying Jimmy Hart's got the Hart Foundation. What if I was a professional wrestling manager? What if my name was Diamond Dallas Page? My wrestlers could be from the Diamond Exchange. And everybody's like, oh, yeah, Joe, shot, shot, drink, drink. And then I said, you know, there's no really good-looking women in wrestling. Miss Elizabeth, she's beautiful, but she's girl next door beautiful. I said, what if I have a whole stable of the ladies, and I called them Diamond Dolls, and they were stripper hot. And Smokey goes, oh, that'll be a stretch. Boom, shot, shot, drink, drink. We got blasted. But the thing is, everything that I was saying, I was writing it down. I tell people all the time, just don't think it, ink it. If it's not writing on a piece of paper, put it on your phone.
Right.
You know, put an alarm on your phone. Write yourself a list. Set goals.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
But this wasn't even a goal. This was a dream. This was a fantasy. This was never going to happen, but it became an idea first. And just an idea. What if?
Mm-hmm.
I've got a new book that just came out. It's called Positively Unstoppable, The Art of Owning It.
Mm-hmm.
The very first chapter is called Living Life at 90%, based on the formula that life is 10% of what happens to you and 90% of how you react to it. The very first line, see if I got it. I'm going to read you the very first line of the book.
Mm-hmm.
It said, if you knew that your success was guaranteed, what would you do? Seriously, think about it. Or try it this way. What would you do if you knew you couldn't fail? So writing that down is just a dream. Like, what would I do if I knew my success was guaranteed? I'd be a manager in WWF or WCW, you know, managing tag team champions. That's what I would do right now at that moment. But again, that's not even in my head at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just having fun drinking. The next day or so later, I get a call from a buddy of mine who worked for the radio station who now had a show on cable, you know, the cable Southwest Florida section, cable station. And he had a show called the Party News Network.
Oh.
And they would, whatever was happening in Southwest Florida, they'd be there. And they'd get, you know, whether it's a club or a big night or a big promotion or, you know, Motley Crue came into town, whatever it was, you know, they were there. So they said, we love your commercials. We'd love to do a story on The Voice. And I still have this video today. It's actually up on my DDP Yoga Now app, under my inspirational section.
Okay.
And they filmed me in my 62-foot Cadillac. They filmed me at the radio station. I just happened to be wearing a WrestleMania t-shirt. Uh-huh. You know, I mean, like, I was a fan. That was it.
Yeah.
And at some point, they're in my office. And I'm sitting at that same desk. And around that time, they say to me, "So where does the voice come from?" Mm-hmm. And I look down and I see Diamond Dallas Page, the Diamond Exchange, the Diamond Dolls. Now, John, if there's not a pair of white sunglasses sitting right next to that, I don't know if I'd do it. But they were sitting right there.
Okay.
And I took those sunglasses and I put them on. And all of a sudden, I was Diamond Dallas Page.
Wow.
And I said, "The voice comes from Diamond Dallas Page, Dada. I was born to be a professional wrestler manager." And I just took the glasses off and went back to the interview. And somebody saw it. And This is another lesson. Like every story I'll tell you, there are lessons in it. And the lessons, if you really pay attention to them, will change your life. Mm-hmm. If you really understand what I'm talking about. And I try to keep everything KISS. Keep it simple, stupid.
Right.
I don't want anything that's too involved. But this is something simple. You never know who's watching.
Okay.
You never know, who's watching you sweep the floor or check out people, mm-hmm, or build that section of the house or, whatever. You never know who's watching. And my entire life has been someone who's been watching and later would try to help me.
Yeah.
Because
that's smart.
Of how hard I was working.
Mm-hmm.
Inside my Hall of Fame ring, the inscription says, "Work ethic equals dreams, explanation point, DDP. So back to the story. I get a call in my club. Now, are we on the radio? Can I say whatever
you can,
I want to say?
You can say anything you want.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So I get a call. I'm in my office. It's the middle of the day because I had to do some paperwork and stuff. And there's someone on the phone for a Diamond Dallas Page. Uh-huh. I pick up the phone. I go, "Fuck you, Smokey." And I hung up the phone. And she calls me back and she said, "That wasn't Smokey. His name's Smitty. He's got a radio show. He wants to talk to you." I pick up the phone and go, "Who is this?" He goes, "Smitty, I've got this radio show. It's based around boxing, but once a month I'm bringing in wrestling. Okay. And I would love to have you come on the show." I go, "Bro, what did you see? The Party News Network?" He goes, "Yeah, I saw it." He goes, "I loved it." I go, "I don't really do it." He goes, "What do you mean?" I go, "It was just in my head. There is no Diamond Dallas Page.
Right.
I'm not in professional wrestling." He goes, "Who cares? It's radio. We can just have fun with it." I go, "I really don't know enough to talk about that." And he goes, "Oh, man." He goes, "I'm going to have Captain Lou Albano on my show." Now, what's the odds of that?
Right. Yes, this was a hero. This is a guy you loved, and now you have a chance to be on the radio with him.
And he's the guy who's on the Girls Just Want to Have Fun video. That I start this whole thing.
That's right.
That I start this whole thing, So he's going to be on the show. I love this guy. I go, "You're going to have Captain Lou on your show?" He's like, "Yes." I go, "Can I talk to him?" He's like, "Absolutely. You'd be my resident expert." I go, "I'm in." So I go and I do the show. And the captain was so gracious. He acted like he knew who I was and blah, blah, blah. And then the next month, Smitty asked me to come back and do it again. And this time it was Sergeant Slaughter. And probably one of the greatest class act guys of all time, Sergeant Slaughter. Super, super great guy. And I figured that's it. And that night, me and Smitty went to go get a drink. And he said, "You really got to do something with this Diamond Dallas Page thing." I go, "Smitty, do what? There's no wrestling. WWF comes through once every year." I go, "It's not like there's anywhere to do anything with it."
Mm-hmm.
He goes, "Well, I got this buddy of mine who was a boxing promoter. And now he's promoting for the AWA, which is, all those, the areas like Wisconsin, you know, Detroit, Chicago, in that Midwestern territory. And he said, I think you should, you know, make a videotape. I have his address. Make a videotape and send it to him. I go, send him what? Dude, right. I don't really do it.
Right.
And he says, yeah, but you're a creative guy. You've got different promotions for your club, you know, not numerous ones every week. Mm-hmm. He goes, you're telling me you can't think of something? So he challenged me, you know?
Yeah.
So I thought, well, I put together three guys. One guy I called, and I dressed him up too and everything, called the Big Bad John. And he was a, you know, a miner in my diamond mines in Johannesburg, South Africa. Okay. Don't you know? Because, you know, again, I've got to create, just like an actor, which I act all the time in different movies and shows. Every show I go on, every movie I do, I create a backstory to that character, which is a lot of me, but then other things that are made up, mm-hmm. you know? And that's how you live the character. And so I had Big Bad John. I had a buddy of mine who was shredded, you know, like maybe 6'1", 255, just twisted steel and sex appeal. Like, super good looking dude. And I got a guy named Ted Ebear, and he was a midget. And he came out with a diamond doll. And bro, I shot this video, and then I had it edited, and I sent it to the AWA. Uh-huh. Never really thinking I'm never going to get anything back. I mean, let me at least try.
Yeah.
You know, I tell people all the time, and some people say, oh, that's bullshit. You shouldn't do that. Bullshit. Fake it till you make it.
That's right.
You know, I want to heard a reverend say, and I used to love listening to some of those over-the-top pastors because fucking A, dude, those guys are entertaining as hell.
That's how Sam Kinison started that way.
Right. They're one of the greatest comedians ever, you know? But yeah, I really love listening to them sometimes. And just really for the entertainment value. Because I know everything. Most of those guys are doing is a total scam. So,
right.
The one guy said, the quickest way to get there is to act like you've already been there.
That's good. Went,
that's genius.
Yeah.
That's not good. That's genius.
Right.
And I thought, okay. So bottom line is, I send it to this guy, Rob Russin. 2 weeks later, he calls me back and he asks for Diamond Dallas Page. And I'm like, you're talking to him. Who's this?
right.
Just go with it, right? Just go with it.
Yeah.
And he says, this is Rob Russell from the AWA. I said, hey, Rob, how you doing? He goes, good. He goes, listen, we've seen your tape and we like your shtick. And we've decided we want to bring you and your boys in for a tryout.
Oh, boy.
Except we got one question. Like, no one's ever heard of you guys.
Yeah.
Like, where are you guys wrestling at?
Man, this is way before the internet. Like, you could hide in different parts of the country. It was possible, right?
There was so many independent groups. But I brought a buddy of mine in. His name is Jack Bernstein. And this guy had the greatest pipes. He had pipes like Earl, what's his name? The really good guy who played Darth Vader.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, God. Earl Jones.
Earl Jones, right?
Yeah, Earl Jones, right? Yeah.
Yeah. He had pipes like that. Like, not that good.
Yeah, just.
But like that.
Yeah.
So he came off like we could have been working an independent circuit. You know, and being on TV. So they just assume, fuck, you guys can wrestle, but no one's ever heard of you. Where are you wrestling? And I'm like, well, Rob, none of those guys can wrestle.
Oh.
He's like, what? why would you send the tape? And I said, Rob, it's like a secret society trying to figure out a way in. And back then, it was next to impossible. There wasn't like today, before COVID, there was so many wrestling organizations where you could actually learn at least a decent, if you had talent, you could learn how to wrestle. Mm-hmm. In Chicago, before COVID, there were 8 different federations. Now, none of them had TV,
right?
But they all wrestled every weekend.
Yeah.
They had wrestling every weekend.
Okay.
Or every 2 weeks. So you could actually work every weekend and get better.
Mm-hmm.
And so when he heard that, he was like, don't call us, we'll call you. And God, throughout my life, has taken shit away, mm-hmm. you know, because you got to get humble.
Yeah.
And has also lined planets for me.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the time, I score big. There's been once real when I really dropped the ball and fucked up.
Yeah.
But it was the best lesson of my life. I tell people all the time, you don't learn anything from winning. You learn from losing.
Yeah.
You learn from falling down and making mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
That time where I didn't use those planets that God lined up for me was the greatest lesson of my life. And it has put me where I am today. But back then, this guy, and most people know him as Paul Heyman.
Mm-hmm.
Back then, he was known as Paulie Dangerously. He was working that place I sent the tape, the AWA.
Yeah.
And Paul left there to go to the NWA, which would become, Ted Turner bought the NWA. It would become WCW.
Wow.
And it left a huge void in the AWA for a young guy that could talk. So 2 weeks later, they called me back.
Okay.
And I wore leopard skin jackets.
Sure.
I wore sequin skin. This is shit I'd be wearing in the nightclub, bro. I used to say
that's
to my
badass,
buddy,
man. That's bad. I mean, that look is kind of coming back these days, if you've noticed.
Crazy,
it's slowly
right?
making a comeback.
No, fucking, no, everybody has big jewelry and all that shit. In 1988, when I created Diamond Dallas Page, I had big DDP.
Yeah.
Look like brass knuckles. Uh-huh. Big MTV. Then I had big Diamond. I had all that stuff. And nobody was doing that
right.
at the time.
Yeah.
And bottom line is they brought me in, and next thing you know, I'm managing. It's like, bring all those crazy clothes you got. Bring a couple of those hot diamond dolls, and we'll give you an audition.
Uh-huh.
And I passed the audition. So for the next 3.5 years, I was still running the hottest nightclub in Southwest Florida.
Wow.
But once a month, I would go on the road and go to Vegas and do 4 TV shows for the AWA, which was being aired on ESPN.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you go to ESPN Classics and see wrestling, there's a good chance you'll see me out there with my tag teams. And I also worked for Florida Championship Wrestling with a guy who would become my mentor, my best friend, my brother, which was Dusty Rhodes.
Ugh.
And you think a guy you watch as a kid who's 10 years older than you,
mm-hmm.
When you think of a guy who you look up to as a kid, and then he becomes your best friend.
Wow.
When this is back in those days.
Yeah.
And this is me and Dusty 33 years ago.
Man, look at that picture. Where was that?
Yeah. That was in Fort Myers, Florida, at the Lee Civic Center.
Uh-huh.
We were going to see Willie.
Okay.
And this is Dusty singing with Willie.
Whoa. What? Look at that picture. Man.
Isn't that crazy?
What a time to be alive.
If you look at this picture here, that's Hulk, Sting, me with dark hair, and Brian Pillman.
Those were the best days, man. Those 80s and 90s days were the best.
They were amazing. And so they brought me in, And I that's how I got on TV. That's how I started to become a part of, wrestling. And then Dusty brought me into Florida Championship Wrestling, and he had me be a color commentator. And I also manage guys. And I go up there once a week. I drive 135 miles. And just to go up there, and I got in a ring a little bit so I would understand bumps these guys were taking if I was going to be a color commentator. And then I'd go after that. It was only for an hour or so I'd do that. And then I'd go up and I'd hang out with Dusty for the day.
Yeah.
And then when TV came around, he'd have me in production meetings and stuff. And I learned from one of the greatest minds ever. And then when it looked like, because Dusty went to WWF and they put him in polka dots, which was like a total rib for the cowboy, you know. They were just fucking with Dusty, you know. And it's like, hey, motherfucker, get that over.
Right.
And he did.
Yeah.
You know, he got it over as big as, you know, he wasn't where he was in WCW or NWA, but it was top spot. Mm-hmm. He worked with all the top guys from Randy Savage on out. And long story short, Florida Championship Wrestling went away. The AWA went away. And it looked like my wrestling career was over. And then Dusty left the WWF and went back to WCW as the booker, meaning head writer.
Okay.
And I had stayed in touch with him that entire year and a half. I didn't get to talk to him much, but I would call every couple of months just to check in. And when I went for my Hall of Fame ring, Dusty had passed by that time, or he would have inducted me. But his wife, Michelle, you know, I just didn't thank Dusty, you know, for everything. I thanked his wife, Michelle.
Yeah.
Because if it wasn't for Shelly, when I called Dusty and he wasn't there, she made sure he called me back.
Okay.
And I was like shocked every time he'd ever call me back. And then when he finally came back into Atlanta, where WCW was for Ted Turner, Turner Broadcasting, you know, we talked. And, you know, I told him, I said, I was getting out of the club business. I was getting married. And I was either going to move to Chicago or I was going to move to Atlanta. And he said, well, if you want to be in wrestling, you got to move to Atlanta. Mm-hmm. And he brought me in as a color commentator and a manager again.
Okay.
But when I finally got my contract, which took a while, when I finally got my contract, 5 months in the managing, Magnum TA pulled me aside and he said, listen, Diamond, we can't let you manage the guys anymore. We're going to still let you do color commentating, which I was on the fourth string team.
Okay.
You know, mine and Eric Bischoff, who was at the bottom of the ladder too at the time, mine and Eric Bischoff's show was probably on in towns like Moose Breath, Iowa at 2 a.m, you know? And,
yeah,
right. You know, so we were at the bottom of the ladder. So I didn't know how long I was going to be able to do that before someone took my spot.
Sure.
But, because I didn't have any credibility. And Magnum said, we can't let you manage anymore. I was like, what? What? Why? What did I do wrong? And Magnum said, you didn't do anything wrong. I go, then why can't I manage? He goes, it's you. You know, the hair, the clothes,
what?
The bling, the, you know, the dolls, the wrap. You're like taking too much attention away from the wrestlers.
Oh,
and
okay.
I also, I managed the Freebirds and I managed Scott Hall. And Scott Hall used to warn me all the time. He said, Dally, you need to take it down a notch. You're taking too much attention away from the match.
Hmm.
And I didn't really understand that then.
Yeah.
So I say to Magnum, I said, so Magnum, are you telling me that I'm too over the top for professional wrestling?
Right. That's the part that's not commuting for me. I can't figure that part out. It seems like it's perfect.
Well, for a wrestler.
Yeah.
Not a manager.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, not for a guy who's around the ringside. For the guy in the ring.
Oh,
and
I
he
see.
Said what we should have done. you know, because I'm managing guys. I'm talking for them. I'm not, you know, I'm a color commentator. I'm not in the ring.
Mm-hmm.
So bottom line is, you know, he said, we should have put you in a pair of tights and boots and see if you could do this. And I was like, man, I never got, you know, right in my mind's going like this.
Uh-huh.
And I'm thinking, I'm 35 and a half.
Okay.
I just got to wrestle 4 or 5 years to get the credibility that I need. I'm going down that power plant. I got 7 months left on my deal. I'm going down that power plant and I'm going to learn how to wrestle.
Wow.
And they beat the fuck out of me down there.
Oh my God.
Because you're a manager. Now you think
right.
You're going to be a wrestler.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it was, you know, they couldn't beat me down though. Yeah, I was like, bring it, motherfucker. You know what I mean? Like, you know, yeah, I mean, you don't know me.
You're already an athletic guy and you're a big guy. So you had, you know, the physical qualities and the heart and the determination and a lot of the know-how because you were in it, you know, managing for a while. So, but they were really trying to prove a point, huh?
Yeah, they really did. But they didn't understand my work ethic.
Okay.
They didn't, you know, they didn't really understand that. And long story short, as time went on, I got everyone's respect. Started making some moves, and then I tore my rotator cuff, and they let me go.
Ugh.
And that's when Jake Roberts moved into my house for the first time. Because he was on the road, and him and his wife had split up. And Jake had come in, actually, right before I tore my rotator cuff. He'd come to the power plant, saw me there working out. He was like, Paige. And
wow, yeah.
We bonded again because they'd been to my club a bunch of times. And then I became like me and Kevin Nash. We were Jake Roberts, like bag carriers, drivers. Like we did whatever the hell he wanted.
Yeah.
Because we wanted to learn from the master.
Right.
And Jake WCW for about 4 months. And that's when Bill Watts came in, and they hated each other. And they said, you know, Jake's gone. And I didn't hear from him for a while. Then I came out of the hospital, and I was at my house, and he called me, and we connected. And he told me him and his wife had split up. So I asked Kimberly if he could live with us. And he did for like 3 months. And I learned so much from him.
Mm.
I always say, without Dusty Rhodes, there is no Diamond Dallas Page.
Mm-hmm.
Without Jake St. Roberts, there's no 3-time world champion. Without the both of them, there's no, you know, there's no Hall of Famer.
Right.
But there is, because I had those guys, and I made a lot of other believers along the way. Because when I told the Freebirds, the night I found out it was my last match, I was going to walk them to the ring and announce them and manage them. And I was we were in Chattanooga. I'll never forget it. I was at the Blue Curtain in Chattanooga and I'm waiting to go, you know, the music to play. So I go out there and Michael P.S. Hayes and Jimmy Jam Garvin walk up to me and they look at me and go, hey dude, sorry, man. I go, so you're hurting. Like, yeah, they couldn't have been more empathetic. They were really like, they hurt for me. And then I said to them, well, fuck it, man. I got 7 months left of my contract. I'm going to learn how to become a wrestler.
Mm-hmm.
And, bro, they looked at each other, looked at me, looked back at each other, and laughed so hard. They thought it was the funniest thing they ever heard because
yeah.
They both started at 16 and 17.
Right.
And friggin' Hayes fell on the ground laughing.
Okay. Yeah. It is kind of crazy to start that late. So I could see that reaction. But yeah, they didn't know your drive.
What one of the greatest things ever. There's a couple of really amazing high spots in my life of wrestling.
Okay.
Of course, number one is the Hall of Fame, and I can thank everybody. And it was an amazing, amazing week that week. But one of the really early ones was that when Michael and I, when he fell down laughing, that was 1991.
Okay.
And 1996 in January, I had a match with Sting.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Sting's going over in the match. It's Sting. You know, yeah. I'm mid-card. I'm the mid-card heel.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, during that match, we just blew it up. We just had crazy chemistry, me and Stinger. And after that match, that's on a Monday night, that, you know, I'm home after that for 37 hours before I have to go out again. But that next day I was at my house and I heard the phone go off and I'm just going to let it go to the machine, right? Back in the day when we had machines.
Yeah, yeah.
And you could hear the person's right. voice, right? Yeah. So I'm walking out the door here, Paige, pay ass. And I'm thinking, Michael's calling me? Holy shit, I haven't heard from him in a couple of years. I run to the phone, and right as he's talking, I pick up the phone, P.S., what the hell are you doing, bro? God damn, son of a thump, thump, thump. I'm like, Mike, what's the matter? What's the matter? You know how sometimes you just want to call someone and leave them a fucking message? I said, yeah, do you want me to hang up so you can leave a message? No, fuck it. You're on here now. Got Paige, saw your match last night. He said, everybody up here did. And I got to tell you, Paige, I have never been so happy to eat crow in all my life. You did a hell of a job. Click, and he hung up with me.
Nice.
That was PNA. Just hang up. You know, don't give me a chance to say anything.
Yeah,
hang up with me.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, he was leaving a message for me personally. Right. But I'll tell you, man, there was nothing. I told that exact story, both of them, from laughing his ass off to calling me in 1996.
Wow.
It was the first. You know, I always tell people, never underestimate the power you give someone mm-hmm. by believing in them.
Oh, yeah.
And Hayes did not believe in me at all. But I made him a believer.
Oh, yeah.
And that is so powerful.
Mm-hmm.
When someone admits, hey,
ooh, yeah.
I was wrong.
Right.
You know, and they want to tell you. They don't have to tell you. They want to tell you.
Right.
The next moment that sticks out for me, and this is this moment here, really both that moment and this next moment are just as big as me winning all the titles that I won. And what people have to understand who don't understand wrestling, when you're winning the TV title or the tag team title or the US championship or the Intercontinental Championship or the World Championship, those are like awards mm-hmm. that are given to the people who are drawing the money, who are selling the merchandise,
okay.
who are captivating the people to turn the channel to watch them.
Right. Right.
And people who are selling the arenas out.
Mm.
They're our Oscar.
Yeah.
Our Hall of Fame.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's as big as it goes. The Hall of Fame, that's freaking the lifetime achievement
yeah.
and the Oscar in the same breath, you know? So I put this next moment, that one with Hayes
yeah.
was right up there
That's
with
great.
Any championship.
That's a good impression of him, too.
It wasn't yeah. so around him enough. But so Jake, you know, when he moved in with me, you know, I used to say, because my rotator cuff, I couldn't even lift my arm past my shoulder, but I eventually rehabbed it and did all the stuff I needed to do. And I would say to him, man, I can't wait till this shoulder gets right and I can get in the ring with you. And he's like, you're going to learn more from me sitting on the couch watching your matches than you ever will in the ring.
Okay.
And it's like game films.
Yeah, yeah.
Like there's a reason why from high school on, if you play football or you play basketball, we film your game.
Mm-hmm.
So we can show you,
yeah.
Oh, that was great. That, well, that you need to work on.
Yeah.
How did you miss that tackle? Here you are right here. I mean, how did you not defend that fast?
Right.
All that shit is learning. I filmed every match I ever did. And a lot of people think we only do TV.
Yeah.
Oh, you see on Monday night. So you wrestle on Monday nights, huh? No. I'm off on Tuesday. There's a really good chance I'm going to be back on the road on Wednesday and wrestling that night, but it might not go till Thursday. That's live, too. Then I wrestle Saturday, Sunday, and then back on Monday.
Yep. And you recorded all of them, whether it aired on television or not.
Right. And the guys used to bust my balls so bad. Oh, my God. They would bust because they thought I was being a mark for myself. I'm like, no, I'm trying to learn how to wrestle in my late 30s.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I did that all the way up into my early 40s. And
it's remarkable.
We'd watch them. And what was really funny, here's the crew I came into wrestling with.
Okay.
Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Mm-hmm.
Drove with him all the time. Mick Foley, Mankind, as people know him.
Right.
Kevin Nash,
mm-hmm.
Scott Hall, Raven. That was my crew of guys.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we drove together. We hung together. We ate together. We trained together. And we watched each other's stuff and would help each other with stuff. And Austin, he didn't have a real character to know how to talk in WCW. When he got fired by Eric Bischoff, which I was like, don't fire him.
Yeah.
Like, not that guy. He hasn't found himself yet. But when he does, and Eric's like, no, he's never going to be anything. I'm like, you're wrong. And we all know, you know, Eric, like Eric said, I was wrong.
Yeah.
I was wrong.
Yeah.
But, you know, bottom line is that Austin used to do color. Like while the film, by the cameras filming me, you know, 60 yards away in the ring, he's doing play by play. And then Steven Regal would come in and Kevin Nash and Raven and just put hysterical shit on there. And then we'd watch it that night. And it was all busting my balls,
okay.
But it was funny, funny shit, you know? And at some point I want to say Austin was there for about, before he got let go, I'd say we were on the road together for probably about 4 months.
Okay.
That every night I had this Austin and Raven and Austin and whoever, these amazing fucking tapes. But every night I'd overtape them because I didn't really think about that.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't think about how entertaining they were. And then one day I realized I got to start saving these fucking things.
Yeah.
So the only one that I had, which I lost, was me and Pillman. And I had all those guys doing color. And I was calling them the Austin tapes. And the next day or that next week, Steve got let go.
Oh,
and I was so pissed. Can you imagine today if I'd had all those matches?
I was just thinking, if you had all that, that you got a whole new YouTube channel worth millions of dollars. I love – this is one of the best interviews I've ever done. I love it. I want to talk a little bit because I just got a thing. We got – what was it? We're good. Okay. So can we talk a little bit about DDP yoga? I signed up for it. I used to play football. I hurt my shoulder. I just moved back to Hickory, North Carolina from Los Angeles. I'm trying to get healthy. My dad had a stroke. He's paralyzed on his left side. We're just trying to get everybody healthy again. And you're this video that I think 73 million people have seen this video. Mm-hmm. This guy, Arthur Borman, paratrooper who hurt himself over the years, and at the end of the video, he's running. I don't know how you watch this video and not cry. I was bawling when I watched this thing.
Yeah, super, 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 super powerful. I'd say that God sent me to him and him to me. And his goal when, and I'll give you how I know him, is anybody who got my program back then, it was just DVDs. It wasn't even like today I have everything. Like it's the workouts that go from literally lying in bed.
Yes, I saw that.
They're called DDPY Rebuild. So there's the bed flex workouts in bed. Like you can't get out of bed. I got three workouts for you that I help you get out of bed and then sit in a chair like I'm doing. And I'm going to have you work out here in the chair. And if you're wearing a heart monitor and you're doing exactly what I tell you to do, I swear to you, your heart rate will end up in the fat burning zone sitting in a chair. And those workouts are designed to strengthen you to get up to our next level where you're in a chair and standing, in a chair, standing, in a chair, standing. Then you're just using the chair as you get up, to get up and get down, to build balance, strength. And then they go all the way from beginner to psycho extreme crazy shit, like I was doing this morning.
Yeah, I signed up for it, and I got all my guys here in the studio, my co-hosts, my interns. We're all going to do it. There's a guy, a level one instructor named Travis Mahaffey, who sort of got us into it. He's a fan of the show. And we're going to try it out for the first time together Thursday, and it'll be another episode on the show. So I can't wait to see what this journey is going to be for us. And these guys, I mean, I'm not flexible at all. That's the one thing I need to work on the most is my flexibility. And everyone's like, I don't know what it is about me. I hate stretching. I got to get over that. And of course, yoga is one of them things. People used to think, oh, that's a feminine thing. That's for women. But I'm ready to start it, and I'm looking forward to doing it. And I will definitely keep you posted on this.
Well, let's do this. First of all, don't call my shit yoga. What I created, DDP yoga, I'm branding DDPY right now. You're going to see DDPY everywhere. You'll see this diamond. It's kind of like our swish sign. In 5 years, no one will call anything but DDPY, and you're going to be able to see this diamond that is super cool. That you see the diamond, you're going to think DDPY.
Okay.
And that's all about branding. But the main reason I'm branding it DDPY, because I want people to stop calling it just fucking yoga.
Right.
Because that's just the piece of it. I was talking to, I don't know if you ever heard of Grunt Style. And Grunt Style, they've got, you know, clothing, and they're all military guys, and they got the flag on the deal, and they're a super friggin' cool company that not just is a clothing company that's geared towards military guys, but they do a lot for former military guys to help keep them going, getting strong.
Yeah.
And we literally been, you know, talking about working together now and stuff. And the girl who's part of this group of people from Grunt Style, they have like five things or six things they're on their itinerary that they really want to push. And she goes, and I can see here, one of them is absolutely fitness, which you fit into that perfectly. And we've got women 18 to 34, which is going to be perfect for you. And I think her name was Tiffany. And I said, Tiffany, I said, do you know who we are? She was, oh, I did some research. I went online. I said, well, I guess you didn't get the fact that 69% of the people, 69% of the people who invest in our product are men.
Right.
And she like, really? I go, really? So please don't call what we do yoga.
Right. It's way more. It's strength. Yeah, it's flexibility. It, yeah.
It's all that. And it's also, it puts it, let me just give the quick little synopsis here. I didn't start wrestling. I was 35. My career didn't take off till I was 40. That was in 96. 97 and 98, according to Pro Wrestling Illustrated, I was top four in the world. Steve Austin was number one. I was four twice, 97 and 98. So easily top 10. And I was living the dream on a crazy level. I was on the road wrestling over 270 nights a year. And I also did Hollywood Squares, the Kilborn Show, Jay Leno, seven times over that 1 year, just in 98 alone. And I filmed Ready to Rumble. I was never home. I just signed a multi-million dollar three-year deal. And at the end, going into 99, Kevin Nash powerbombed me.
Yep.
It wasn't his powerbomb. It was because he laid me flat as he could.
Yep.
And that's our goal, to lay each other flat.
Yeah, yeah.
It wasn't the bump. It was the straw on the camel's back that went boom. And I ruptured my L4 and L5. You could say I broke my back.
Right.
And three different spine specialists told me, I'm never going to wrestle again. What are you talking about? I just signed a multi-million dollar three-year deal, which goes bye-bye in 6 months if I can't wrestle. So that's how yoga got introduced to me.
Yeah.
I'm the guy. I am that guy, like a lot of guys listening right now, that wouldn't be caught dead doing yoga.
Right.
The first 42 years of my life.
There's a lot of guys that. Yeah.
Yeah. But again, I would do anything to keep living the dream. So once Kimberly, my wife at the time, once she got me on the mat, it was rough in the beginning because there was no modifications. And the guy who was teaching on this class, his name is Brian Kest. He's like the Hulk Hogan of power yoga.
Mm-hmm.
And today he's a very good friend of mine. But back then he was just some guy I'm watching on a tape.
Right.
And he was yogic, but he was still cool. But everybody on that tape was like Gumby.
Right.
And they're all super lean and they could do anything. And here I am trying to do shit. No one's showing me how to modify anything. Let's go back. DDPY starts in bed, goes to a chair, goes to using a chair. If you go to beginner for my opening 10 workouts, you go to from beginner to double black diamond in those workouts, someone is always modifying the position.
Yeah.
So I can show you the hardest, most challenging way to do it, and the other person is on a nape.
Wow.
Other person stepping in. Because DDPY has to meet you where you are. So what ended up happening, I ended up mixing the yoga. After 3 weeks, I started to get it. I started to figure out how to modify it. I swear to you, bro, I was blown away by how much my flexibility was starting to come back and my strength was starting to come back that it blew my mind.
Yeah.
Now, I'm still doing rehab, and I'd rehab both shoulder surgeries and both knee surgeries. So I knew a lot about rehab.
Yeah.
Now I was going to the rehab that the doctors were giving me for my back. So I just mixed the yoga positions with the rehabilitation techniques.
Yep.
Like, wow, this mix is perfect. Then I'm a weightlifter, but I can't lift weights right now. I can't put a strain on my body. I'm a meathead. But how do I do it? Well, I'd always heard that body on body, like body weight stuff, like push-ups and squats, and just using your own body weight against you will really help, can hold muscle. So I started doing 3-second push-ups where I'd lower for 3, hold for 3, and push up for 3. I had to do them on my knees in the beginning. Eventually, I got off my knees. Eventually, those 3-second push-ups became 5-second. 5-second became 10-second push-ups. Try 1. Lower for 10.
Yeah.
Hold 3 inches off the ground for 10. And push up for 10. So long story short, doing that, I realized that slow burn movement, I started wearing a heart monitor probably 2 years before I got hurt. And the main reason I started working with a heart monitor, because I didn't want to have my heart rate too high when I was doing any kind of cardio stuff, because I was already beating up my body so much that I had to give it a chance to not be so beat up. And I understood that where my heart rate should be so I don't overtrain. So,
well, I can tell you, I'm 100% looking forward to it, and I'm a little bit nervous about it. I'm going to keep you posted. Look, folks, you got to check out the DDP Yoga. I also want to tell them to check out your documentary on Amazon Prime, Resurrection of Jake the Snake, which I'm going to watch, and the upcoming film, Relentless. Will that be on Vimeo? Will that be on...
It'll be on Amazon Prime probably in about a month, going into definitely by December. And that's really Jake, Resurrection Jake the Snake is Jake's story.
Yeah.
Of just going from the depths of hell.
Yeah.
To turning his whole life around. And if you could talk to Jake today, you'd be like, wow, that son of a bitch. He's doing so good. We got to get him on your show.
I would love to. I would love to do a follow up with this as well, so you can see like a before and after.
Absolutely.
And thank you so much for your time. I really really appreciate it. Alan, are we good? Do we need to? Okay. I'm so sorry. God bless you, DDP.
Well, let me just finish with this.
Please.
Anyone who wants to follow me or what I'm doing on Twitter at RealDDP. At DDP Yoga on Instagram, at Diamond Dallas Page, or at DDP Yoga. But the real site, like if you don't listen to what I have to say about my own program, because bottom line is 3 months after starting DDPY, I was back in the ring.
Yep.
After three spine specialists told me I was done, I was back in the ring. At 42, they said my career is over. 43, I was a world champ. So, and I wrestled from until I was 49.
That's crazy. So,
can't tell me anything.
No, you're living proof.
That wouldn't do. And just go to Facebook, DDP Yoga, one word, and read what people write. They're not my page. Go to the members page. Read what they say. It'll blow your mind. I want to get back with you a month from now.
Okay.
So have your guy talk to Marlon. And if you're really putting the work in, I want to hear where you're at.
Well, I have to now. God bless you again, DDP. I can't wait to talk to you again. I hope I don't let you down. I'm going to do my best.
No, I'll tell you now, don't let yourself down. All right, brother. It's been your pleasure. See ya. See you, buddy.
It's time for Country Ish. Woo!